In 2014, when residents in Flint, Michigan were complaining that their water tasted bad and in some cases was hurting their eyes when they showered with it, they were told by the city that the water was safe. It took veteran investigative reporter Kurt Guyette to expose the high levels of lead in the drinking water. As part of his work with the ACLU of Michigan, he was looking into places like Flint where emergency managers were running the city. Working with citizens and scientists, he proved that the emergency manager's decision to switch Flint's public water from the Detroit system to the Flint River caused corrosion in the aging pipes and exposed thousands of residents to dangerous levels of lead. This week, a congressional panel began looking into who's responsible for the failure in Flint, from the local government to the EPA and even Governor Rick Snyder. I got a chance to speak with Kurt Guyette in Pittsburgh when he was in town for a panel discussion about lead and water at Point Park University. When you look at the field of environmental journalism and health, it's sometimes difficult to point to health impacts like those that people have experienced in Flint, like losing their hair and elevated levels of lead in children's blood, and connect that to a specific pollution point or events. But that's exactly what's happened in Flint. And so I'm just wondering how you investigate that chain of causation.
Well, actually, the key factor in Flint didn't have anything to do with me directly. It had to do with a doctor at Hurley Medical Center who, after we were involved in doing the independent study of lead in Flint's water, took it upon herself to look at lead blood levels in children under five and compared them to a nine-month period before the switch to the Flint River to a nine-month period after the Flint River, and was able to show that after the switch to the river, the percentage of kids with elevated levels of lead in their blood doubled. And it only happened in Flint. The rest of the county that Flint is located in, Genesee County, remained on the Detroit system for water. And so they were able to show, you know, direct correlation between the switch to the river and elevated levels of lead in the blood of kids. And so, you know, that was not my reporting, but it was crucial information to bring out because it did show causation. But it was also our previous work to investigate to find out what the lead levels in the water were that caused that doctor to do that. So there's a little bit of a chain reaction.
This story has a lot of components of race and class, which are also traditionally in environmental reporting, very difficult to report on. So can you talk a little bit about the role that those play in this reporting the story?
One thing for certain is that the school districts and cities in Michigan that have been taken over by emergency managers, taken over by the state, are majority African American with high poverty rates. Flint's probably about 56-57% African American with a poverty rate of 40%. Detroit, which was taken over by emergency managers, 85% black with poverty rate, I think, around 40% as well. So these are African American cities and school districts and poor cities that are being taken over like this and having democracy taken away from them as a result of this emergency manager law. Yeah, and the other thing that's going on is it's not just only poor African-American cities that are having this infrastructure crisis that is part of this. The federal government has cut back tremendously on the amount of funding it gives for water and sewer infrastructure, and as a result, the costs are being placed increasingly on the backs of ratepayers, and poor people are being water is being put out of their price range. We saw it in Detroit. Tens of thousands of people the past couple years have gotten their water cut off because people just simply cannot afford the bills. And Flint, they were paying $150 a month for their water. You know, the highest rates in the country for water that they couldn't drink.
The different kind of water war. We're hearing a lot about the water wars in California. It's a different kind of thing in this water-rich region that we have.
Absolutely. You know, Flint's right in the heart of the Great Lakes system, which has 20% of the world's fresh surface water. You would think that no place would water be cheaper or cleaner. But because of the costs, and the costs associated with the aging infrastructure. These people were poisoned because the state was trying to save some money.
Why did it take so long for other media to pick up on this story and respond to the public outcry about the water problems that people in Flint were experiencing?
I think there's a number of factors involved there. One is that the government continued to maintain that the water was safe. And, you know, people, even reporters, tend to believe the government is going to tell them the truth when asked a question. So that's part of it. I think there also might be a little reluctance or hesitation, trepidation, something this big. I'm not even sure the right word, but when you're saying, geez, a whole town of 100,000 people is getting lead poisoned because their water is not being treated properly, that is a pretty huge claim to be making. And, you know, people are reluctant to go too far out on a limb with something that huge.
You're here in Pittsburgh to talk about your reporting in Flint, which is a very specific situation with an emergency manager and decisions to save money by switching the city's water source, and that caused the lead contamination. But what can other cities, especially here in the Rust Belt, learn from what happened in Flint?
You know, it's hard to say, talk about good things coming out of Flint because of the tragedy is so severe and heartbreaking, but definitely one thing that is happening is a heightened awareness about the potential for lead in people's water. Michigan is not the only state where the Department of Environmental Quality conducts its water sampling in a way that causes the results to skew low. Somebody just told me today that there's been a significant increase in the number of people asking for the water to be tested for lead here in Pittsburgh. And I said, well, you know what? It's not enough to just have their water tested. They need to find out what the protocols are for conducting those tests. Because if they're doing certain things that a number of states are doing where loopholes in the law are being exploited, they need to know that because they're not really getting accurate results if that's going on. Even the size of the bottles that they use. The rule is that you're supposed to put your bottle under the tap and turn the tap on full speed, because the faster the water is moving, the more likely it is to dislodge lead particles. In Michigan, they were using bottles that were like pop bottles with a small opening, which would kind of be a natural deterrent to people turning the water on full speed. You're going to run it slow. Whereas Virginia Tech, which we worked with to conduct independent tests, they had bottles that, like mayonnaise jars, big, wide, open mouths, so you could do just that. So there's a lot of sneaky tactics used by different states in order to minimize the amount of lead they are finding, because if they end up over the federal action level, then there's a likelihood they're going to have to start replacing these lead service lines, which is a big cost. And so there is a financial incentive to not find lead.
The Allegheny Front is a nonprofit environmental news program, and I think sometimes that makes people think we're environmentalists mm-hmm. and biased, which is not how we are approaching environmental news. And you're a reporter for the ACLU, which is a human rights organization. And I'm wondering how you manage that relationship as a journalist and the expectations that people have of reporters.
You know, I've been a reporter for more than 30 years, and the mindset that I've always had is the one that I bring to this job, and that the bottom line is whatever people want to call you is the work, and is the work that you're producing accurate, fair, credible. You know, as long as those criteria are being met, and you know, you build the reputation of producing that kind of work, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine.
How has reporting this story in Flint changed you as a journalist, or what are you taking away from it?
It's had a profound effect on me, just in terms of how I feel about the people of Flint. I don't live in Flint. I live in the Detroit area. Flint's about 70 miles away. I'm not even sure I was ever in Flint before I started reporting this story. But my feelings for the people of Flint run very deeply. I really love it and feel connected to it. that's probably the biggest personal effect on me. But it certainly has made me very proud of the ACLU of Michigan, that they had enough foresight to try something new, to give me the opportunity. I tell people that I can't even call this my dream job because I didn't ever envision being in a situation like this before.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Kurt Guyette is an investigative reporter with the ACLU of Michigan. He broke the story about the lead water crisis in Flint, Michigan. There's more about his work and related stories on lead and water at our website, alleghenyfront.org. This is The Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapple.